Welcome, this is the UX Design Cast podcast series, and my name is Carl Vredenberg. This is the interview format of this podcast series, and I'm delighted to have a guest with us today, Ilona Posner. Hello, Ilona.
Hi, Carl, how's it going?
Very good, thanks so much for agreeing to be on this interview portion of this podcast. So let's get started. Can you tell us a little bit about your current role, where you're at, you know, what you've done recently, just by way of introduction?
Yes, I am an independent usability consultant, and I have been doing this I've been in this area of human-computer interaction for about 20 years now, and a consultant since 2000, primarily as a consulting role. I am also a lecturer at the University Toronto in the Department of Computer Science, where I teach human-computer interaction. I am also on faculty at the Media Lab at the Canadian Film Center, where I do the usability component in the Interactive Art and Entertainment program. And on top of that, I do some chairing of a programming for the Torquay chapter, the local chapter in Toronto of the Human-Computer Interaction Special Interest Group. And I'm also a co-chair of the student design competition for the CAI conference in the year 2008.
So. Wow, this is everything you're doing at the same time now.
Yeah, that's just my work-related stuff.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's quite extensive. My God, it was like six different jobs just there. Yeah, making me tired just listening to all the things that you do. So tell me a little about what of all of that you're particularly proud of. What kinds of things that you're doing currently are things that you really, really enjoy and you'd like to maybe just tell us a little bit about?
I enjoy teaching, since I do two different courses of that. I also enjoy working with really smart people, and so design projects are always very fun and rewarding, working with creative teams and interesting, innovative opportunities. And since my consulting job is really project-based, I sometimes work with my colleagues who have overflow of work, and they call me, and I'm an independent, so I can do that easily. And I do things like expert reviews, design, testing, what of really the whole gamut of possible usability applications. And then what makes me really proud is when I can impact people's perception of design and usability, and that includes both people, say development teams that I work with. If I come off of that project and they see their users in a different light, if they think about their designs in a different way, and it's also really exciting to have that kind of impact on my students, where designers and programming students come out of my courses thinking more about their users, looking at the world around them with different set of eyes, mm-hmm. where they notice design implications and they notice issues that users may be having with their own designs. So that's the kind of stuff I'm very proud of.
That's great. No, and I remember you presenting at conferences before on a variety of different types of projects that you've been involved in. You have a very wide range of those projects. Now, you'd mentioned about the teaching and also the kinds of experiences that are good for students to have and to have some insight into. Can you talk a little bit about what kinds of skills you think people in this discipline really need to have, you know, in doing the kind of work that's currently demanded of them? What are your thoughts in terms of the most important skills to have?
Well, I think the most important set of skills are human people skills. Ability to work in groups, ability to collaborate with people in different disciplines, to understand and respect other opinions and expertise. And so really having a sincere interest in other people makes a huge difference. A lot of most of my work comes from people I know. I don't go out looking for work. People call me all the time. So I think having the relationships that you build is really critical. And when you start working, so the important skills, when I approach a new project, getting into the team, feeling the culture of the team, fitting in so that you understand the culture and are able to interact within that culture. And then as you go on to, say, the area of expertise, say you're developing for banking application or whatever the subject area is, again, understanding and learning with everybody that you come in contact with, and being able to sort of discern and appreciate and respect everybody's insight and input, and then filter and understand implications for design based on that. Multitasking is another really, really critical skill to have in this area. Problem solving, and because you're always facing new challenges every day, new medium, new platform, new design team, new user group. And so really being able to adjust and get into the environment, culture, and behave within that space. And I think those are probably the most important skills. Of course, that's a given that you have a very strong foundation in your own area and you understand your area, your vertical of expertise, so that you can contribute significantly to your component of the project design.
Very, very good list of fundamentals for effectively working. In fact, the first one you mentioned, I think, is also particularly interesting, in that a lot of people don't realize that most of these exercises of doing designs and working and building products and websites and the like, it's a very human enterprise, and that a lot of the time you really need to be working with very effectively working with, you know, other people in moving this stuff forward as well. So on the topic of again the discipline itself of, you know, user experience and design and the various disciplines that comprises, what do you think is the biggest challenge that the discipline has? I mean, things seem to be changing somewhat. We have different types of UIs. We've got, you know, Web 2.0. We've got sort of direct contribution of users to the actual design exercise in terms of the read-write web and immediate feedback and the like. What kinds of things do you think are the biggest challenges for our overall discipline?
I think we still have a fairly low public profile. I think our branding is weak, and that I'm still coming across people who are in development teams or in large projects who are going, what's usability? And I think, and as the tools get better, people start using the tools and creating applications and building, and, you know, Web 2.0 is fantastic, but if the tools for contribution of your content are not completely invisible and get out of the way so that your end user can contribute, then you don't have a Web 2.0 solution. So the need for usability is even greater now because our audience, our target audience, is expanding. We're way into the population. You know, we're getting into the seniors, we're going younger, we're going to third world countries, and people who have never ever seen technology are now using cell phones all the time. So I think our challenges of creating really good technology are, you know, ever increasing, because now we're getting ubiquitous, pervasive technology. Everything's becoming technology. But the challenges for design and for making them seamless and making them fit to our target audience and appropriate and task smoothing rather than impeding, and all those. So we need to, I mean, the need is there. People who are building are starting to appreciate our contribution, and that, you know, simplicity doesn't just happen by itself. That it's actually a lot of work to create things that are simple and usable. And so really getting more understanding into bigger, larger, wider audiences of what the value that we contribute.
That's it.
So nobody would consider building a road without a civil engineer. And yet, you know, do people really know that it's a civil engineer and not a different kind of engineer that is going to do that for you?
Right, right. Excellent point. No, and it. So, at a base, you're saying that the fundamental understanding and sort of the penetration of the importance of this topic area is still not necessarily at the level that it should be, and that there are also additional challenges of, you know, designing for particular audiences, that the audiences themselves are drastically different as well, in the sense of, you know, the worldwide audience, the age of the population, the notion of even designing for Web 2 in terms of kinds of feedback. Those are all, you know, challenges to be able to stand up to and address. I just wonder what your thoughts are on, we've talked before about our discipline as a focus on simplicity, as a focus on designing to eliminate user error. The other flip side of that is designing for delight, you know, and truly design, actually visual design and design for affective reaction. It strikes me that there's also a change in the overall landscape in terms of user experience design, looking also specifically at, you know, to coin one vendor's marketing in this area, the WOW starts now. That's a lot of real focus on visual design and not just necessarily designing for elimination of user error. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think the WOW factor is very important in the stores, on air, on ads. That's very shallow. It's kind of the beauty is skin deep kind of problem. But if your WOW gets you home and then you can't use it, The statistics for wireless home internet return, because people bring them home and they can't set them up. Right. And so it doesn't matter how beautiful the system is, that technology is, if people can't use it, they're not going to tell their friends to buy it. And so it's the whole process needs to be smooth and designed. The whole, as you say, user experience, you know, from the point of contact, touch, and all the way around to upgrade and so on, you know, that famous circle that I borrowed from your slides years ago and still use all the time. And that whole cycle, and so the challenge of, yes, it's beautiful, but if we can't use it, what's the point? If it's not painless, it doesn't matter how lovely it fits in my hand, if I can't get it to do what it's supposed to do, that's not going to help me have a good experience, and it's not going to sell the product further.
So it might even be a thinking of the Maslow's hierarchy of needs. What you're basically saying is, if you don't have some base simplicity built in, then the thing can be as beautiful as anything, but it still won't, you know, hit the mark if it doesn't have some base level of usability built in. But that
usability has to be saturated all the way through to the very bottom of it.
Excellent.
No, there's examples of washing machines, right, that have now a home button and a preferences. Like, please tell me, why does a washing machine need a home?
Right.
And actually, if you've seen those washing machines, the salespeople don't know how to operate them. The consumers don't know how to operate them. And I'm thinking, who could have possibly approved that kind of design, and how much money went into development and actually, you know, for producing this product that then in the end is going to have very mixed, limited appeal.
A very good point. No, and I get thinking again, the teaching that you do, and you deal with a full range of our discipline in terms of the sort of base sort of education that future members of our community get, and actually do work directly in a variety of different organizations that professionals in our discipline are part of, as well as, you know, doing the consulting work yourself. What you'd mentioned earlier about some general skills that you think people should have, but what kind of advice do you typically give students or anybody that is thinking about getting into this discipline area, or possibly already going down the path of getting into it? What some of the kinds of things are that may not be immediately obvious to anybody that may have read about what this discipline or these disciplines, I shouldn't say just a single discipline, the disciplines around user experience and design involve. What kinds of insights beyond the ones that you told me earlier do you have that you could impart to our audience?
I have these what I call four rules of life, Ilona's four rules of life.
Mm-hmm.
They're pretty simple and generalizable to many different situations, but I'll start my answer with that. And the rules are, one, life is short. Two, mm-hmm. people are busy. Three, it's not always about you. And four, the only thing that you can guarantee in life is change.
Oh, those are very insightful. They really
so
are.
Those are I apply those to a lot of situations in teaching and projects and children. And so keeping those in mind, as in, our users too busy, so we have to make a simple application. That's where the people are busy comes from, and the life is short rule.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always about you. When you're a website, there's lots of other sites,
mm-hmm.
and people are not coming to your website because you have a website. They're coming there to address a problem that they have, and
right.
it's your job to address their problem really quickly and easily, or they will go somewhere else,
mm-hmm.
to somebody who does a better job of it. And it's not always about you when you're talking about project work. Applies to, well, there's all these other talents and there's all these other constraints, and you have to really take them all into account and consider, you know, what are the implications for some of these solutions that we may take, and how do we make the compromises, how do we trade off to maximize our outcome as a group. And the final thing is, the only thing you can guarantee in life is change. And that is a big lesson of continuous learning and continuing, just because we put up a website today doesn't mean it's going to be okay for tomorrow. New technology comes. Everything is always changing. So we just have to understand that and prepare for that and embrace that, because we have no other choice.
Mm-hmm. Now, those four Ilona's laws, or whatever you called them.
Ilona's rules of life.
Oh, there you go, rules of life. I think they're very, very important and useful. And the last one, you know, talking about continuous learning, makes me want to ask you how, you know, it's tough to keep up on what is going on in the discipline, in the technology areas that we're working on at any one time. There's just a lot of stuff to get through. How do you personally keep up with the discipline, the technology areas? What are your strategies?
Well, I spend a lot of time reading, trying to keep up with the journals and newsletters, podcasts. I try to listen to as many as I possibly can in my time. I learn a lot from smart people. And so attending conferences and professional meetings is a really important part of that. And learning from your network of acquaintances and colleagues. Teaching as well is a big learning part for me, because in order to teach something, and in order to stay current in the teaching, I have to keep upgrading and updating my materials all the time. And I learn from my students as well, because they have a very different take on life and they have different experiences. So really, taking the opportunity and learning from everybody, and I think that covers the professional development part.
Mm-hmm.
Reading books, obviously. Yep, it takes a long time.
And on the topic of time, I think those are all excellent ways of keeping up with the discipline and the profession. On the topic of time and fitting all of this stuff into a day, and yet still having time for family, friends, and sleep. What kinds of insights might you have in, again, working in this discipline? It's often tough to get the right balance of work-life balance. What are your insights and any advice that you might have in that regard?
Well, I think rule number one, life is short.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very important rule here. And you can't do everything, but you can do a lot, and I try that all the time. But setting priorities is a really important rule. Is a really important thing there in terms of balancing. personal life, professional life, and getting a serious hobby is also a very important component, I think, in the overall balance. You know, getting something that uses the other part of your brain that you don't normally use, or maybe part of your body that you don't normally use in your everyday working life, doing something else, I think really makes your brain shake up and revitalize and get more creative and more productive in your working life.
Sounds refreshing, and sounds like you've got some decent balance in your life with those kinds of insights as well. Let me just, before we finish up, ask. I mean, I've asked a number of questions here and things that I thought would probably be of interest to our listening audience. Is there anything that I didn't ask that you think might be good to cover still before we finish up?
I would love to see a time, I don't know if it's much a question or sort of a open thought that I would love to hear. I'd like to see a time when our technologies, all these, for example, getting on Skype today was a big headache, you know. Mm-hmm. It's a lovely, wonderful technology, but if you don't have the right version, if your computer doesn't happen to be set up in the right way, or the other, my other story was World Usability Day. I wanted to join in and watch their broadcast, and I couldn't get the right preferences set on the computer. It didn't support any of the browsers on my machine, so I had to borrow another machine, and I spent about 40 minutes trying to get the download and get access to the application. So I would love to see a day, and really hope that one day we can accomplish a design that's invisible, that actually gets out of the way, that we, you know, not us as just as professionals, but our end users can actually be self-sustaining, and, you know, they can push the Skype button, actually get it working the first time. They can push a download this webcast or broadcast and actually view it without having to go through 10 extra steps of downloading the right plugins and so on. Mm-hmm. I mean, those kinds of things are really frustrating, and now that we have more devices and more platforms and more different operating systems and so on, as the diversity increases, are we ever going to see a day where we can just, you know, develop for a single thing and then have it propagate seamlessly, painlessly, and actually work the way it's supposed to?
Right,
you know,
right.
I mean, our job of usability on the front end is really critical, but the front end working with the back end is a really huge bottleneck, I find, right now, which, I don't know, but do you have any ideas of how that might go?
Well, I was just going to ask you whether you think it's getting better. I mean, I know on my blog I've got a question that I ask people, you know, are just very, very simply, you know, are things getting better or are things getting worse? I mean, the systems are getting different, you know, there's more mm-hmm. technology all the time. I mean, the thought that we would use our computers to talk to one another using mm-hmm. Skype like this, for example, you know, wasn't around a while ago. Doing podcasts, putting them up there on iTunes. I mean, all of that stuff is sort of new, and maybe it's the case that we keep on having to raise the bar of what it takes to be simple, you know, in this world. But what are your own insights in terms of whether things
are
getting
better?
Or
I don't know. I'm getting pretty scared. I think I just hate to see the day when we become extinct because we just built the complexity so high that it's now impossible. Like that downloading that World Usability Day broadcast mm-hmm. for me was such a huge, frustrating experience. And now, you know, and that was just a little simple nothing kinds of technologically wise. Oh, nothing. Mm-hmm. If we now consider it a fairly simple technology, but now we are layering so much technology on top of everything. You know, the Y2K fear was a big one, but I think or what about the blackout? Remember the North mm-hmm. American blackout we had a few years ago?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, we are so dependent on technology. Do we have sufficient backups and, you know, insurance that we're not going to completely go away the way of the dinosaurs because we built it so complex and so interconnected, and now we can't reboot
mm-hmm.
and we can't survive without it. And if the electricity goes out, well, the sky is beautiful, but...
No, it's an excellent point, and so I think, you know, it really is the case that we've got more and more and more technology all the time, and trying to get on top of it. In some ways, you know, you think that things haven't necessarily gotten that much better, and then you realize what you used to worry about before. Like, you used to worry about, you know, where you'd actually be able to plug in your computer to get any kind of a network connection. Well, you know, a lot of people now just have pervasive wireless around, and they have it in their houses. They just open the lid to their notebook computer and get connected, and you sort of take that for granted now. You take it for granted when it doesn't work, right? But
yes, and have you ever had an outing where you went socially and you said, "Oh, I'll just call you," and then for some reason you're out of batteries or you forget your phone or whatever? Our communications now so dependent on these always present, always available technologies. We're missing the backup.
Yes, no, that's a good point. And then you get into the, is it the case that we actually change the very social fabric of human existence when you do things like, I'm thinking of the ways in which we connected to do this session through Facebook, and that a lot of communication, a lot of social interaction is actually being arranged, but also some of it actually is being interacted and actually carried out, you know, using Facebook. And as you say, you know, if the power goes out, you know, we have to actually talk to each other in person. My gosh.
First, have to get to each other. So first, we have to find each other because, you know, we won't have maps.
That's right.
And then we're going to have to, and we're really far away from each other. So, you know, I don't know. Are we better off? In some ways, sure, it's easier when it all works well, but when it doesn't, we're in big trouble.
Yeah, that's excellent, excellent point. Well, on that score,
on that optimistic note, no, let's finish it on a positive.
Well, I was just
no, it's getting much, much better.
There you go.
One of my points was, you have to be positive. You have to. I mean, otherwise, we'd all bury our heads in sand, and that would be. We might as well go on a long holiday. But no, it's definitely worthwhile. There is a lot of good work out there, and continuing to teach and impact positively people's lives. That's what we try to do.
That's an excellent point, and I think it is. It's interesting to just a final note too, to think about that people that are in the user experience and design sets of disciplines, especially the human computer interaction, usability specialist side of that discipline set, tends to have a focus on identifying problems. I mean, that's what a lot of the focus has been over the last number of years. And I think naturally, you'd always be looking for, you know, a problem to solve. And I think that it sometimes takes, you know, stepping back too and saying, well, wait a minute, you know, there's different kind of problems now, really. And there's some, you know, base ones that you know, may well have been addressed already. But I think it is the case that you have to still be vigilant all the time. You can go crazy in trying to embrace, you know, new technologies and wrestle with their nuances and the like. But the bottom line is that you take the bigger perspective. You were about to say.
Yeah, in my class, I say every week I have the students come with good and bad design examples from their week. So good is really important to learn from as well as bad.
Excellent point. Yeah, and I've been trying to collect, and anybody that may want to suggest any that are listening here as well, carlvredenburg@gmail.com is my email address, and my blog is carlvredenburg.com. If you wanted to send along any of your thoughts in terms of really good examples of design and some of the worst examples of design. And before we finish, is there any contact information that we can leave the listeners with how to get in contact with you?
Yes, I'm Ilona, I-L-O-N-A, @acm.org. And I want to invite people to send me, I have a large collection of bathroom and toilet usability. So toilets, sinks, signs, faucets. Cool. If you have any interesting examples, please send them to Ilona, I-L-O-N-A, @acm.org.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for that. I actually have some pictures that are in a presentation that I give that talks about sort of ease of use or the lack of, thereof in the world in general, and I have some bathroom kind of pictures in there too. Some really fascinating challenges in the design of bathroom elements. So
I would like to talk about those because everybody can relate to it, whether they're technology people or not. Everybody can relate to challenges in bathroom fixtures and so on. So send them to me, please, Carl.
Sounds cool. I will do that. Well, I'd like to thank you for being our guest today on the UX Design Cast podcast series, Ilona.
Thanks for having me. It's great
we'll
fun.
Talk to you again soon. And that is then it for this installment. Bye all.